This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Minutes after 4 o'clock in Central Virginia. It's 83 degrees here in God's country. I hope you're doing well. My name is Coy Barefoot. This is Charlottesville Right Now. News Radio 1070 WINA. John Whitehead is the CEO and the co-founder of the Rutherford Institute. You can learn more online at a fantastic website, rutherford.org. He joins me once a month on this program, and we are so happy to see you back on the program. And I just want to begin by saying again, we spoke before we went on the air, but I just wanted to say how sorry I am and how my heart breaks for you and your family at the loss of Carol, your wife, who I said earlier passed away very suddenly, very tragically, with no warning, recently. And I'm so sorry, John.
Yeah, really, sir. Very difficult.
Yeah. Can we talk about Carol? I would like to just talk about a little bit about her and the contributions that she made to the success of the Rutherford Institute, because I know, being your friend, she was right there the whole way. She was there at the very, very beginning. But before we do that, tell folks how y'all met, because y'all knew each other as children, right?
Yeah, as, way back 1960, Peoria, Illinois, one night I saw this kids playing Kick the Can. She was in grade school, and I was going into high school. I saw this cute little girl, and I went over and played Kick the Can, tried to kiss her, and she wouldn't let me do it. And we hung around a little bit, and then I was going to high school, and she was too young. And she wrote about this years later. I just kind of basically did the dump. I dumped her and said, I'm too old for you, and went into high school. And so she cried herself to sleep for a year, which is true. And then I would see her in high school and just walk by her and blew her mind. And then went to my first year of college, came back to Peoria and saw this cute little thing standing in the front yard, picked her up on my motorcycle. And after that was romance and love, and I rekindled. And yeah, and we, you know, she went back to college with me. We got married in the summer of love, 1967. Sgt. Pepper's was the big album that year. And, went back to school. She worked to put me through school. She was the bright student, by the way. She was a straight A student. In high school, I graduated, like, out of 170 students, I was like 168. I was horrible. My high school counselor actually told me, I never forgot his name, because he said, you should go to work at the factory. It was Caterpillar Tractor Company. He says, you'll never make it in college. But I had a friend who said, you should go to college. You're smarter than you think. And I did, and that changed my life. But she worked. She actually didn't go to college so I could go through, and then went in the Army, and then she put me through law school. We had a child, and the pivotal moment in my life, probably in terms of what I was going to do, is I got sick of law school my first year, and I walked in and said, I'm quitting. I can't take it anymore. Kids were dropping out in law school.
You told Carol that?
Yeah, I just said, I'm quitting. And so she just set me down and said, basically, she's going to kick my butt. She was going to walk out on me. She was sick of it. And she said, you either get back in school or that's it. And so next day I went back to school, law school. If it hadn't been for that, I would have quit. And you know, all through my life, she was like that. I often say she was this ominous presence. She was a wife, but she was more like a mother. I mean, she was always telling me, you're going to be a jerk if you do this. And I would do a commentary sometimes. And I work 2 days a week at home, and she'd type it up. And I'd go, I really like that one. She'd go, you're not putting this one out. You look like a jerk. She'd actually tear them up in front of me. And that was it. It didn't go out.
She was your first line editor on all your work, right?
She was my censor. Yeah. But she was a good censor. I mean, she had a good common sense. I don't a lot. I just like to say things, and she'd say, "You're not going to say that. You look like a jerk," and she'd tear them up. So she was like that, very much like a mother to me. We were like one flesh, but she was always intelligent, organized, which I'm not. I'm intense, rude, harsh a lot, and she's just the opposite. You knew her.
Yeah.
We were always together. That was the thing.
Yeah.
People, it was never... when Kathy Harding did a piece in the Seville Weekly, she referred to us as John and Carol, but she ran the words together.
Yeah. Well, that was the first thing I said to somebody. We're talking with John Whitehead. The first thing I said to somebody when I learned that Carol died is, number one, how surprised I was because this was sudden.
She was in great shape, by the way. Yeah.
But just that you were like two aspects of the same person as far as I was
concerned. Yeah, one flesh. Yeah. When people saw us, it was always us together. When we came here to do this show, she sat in the lobby.
Every time, yeah.
When I spoke in the early days, endless speeches, same speech, trying to raise money for Rutherford, looking out there to be 20 people, Carol was sitting in the front row, always sitting there patiently listening to me talk. So, you know, I've cried virtually every day now. It's the 34th day since she died. You know, I cry, you know, I think about her, but, and I'm not going to get any better for a long time because you just can't. You can't. It's like cutting your leg off.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a hole in the world.
There's a hole.
And it'll always be there.
There's a hole avoiding me. It's huge. There's a great book called A Grief Observed by C.S. Lewis, the great Christian apologist. He wrote a book about when his wife died, and I reread it again, and I'm writing a commentary on it about my wife. But, you know, his life fell apart, and he said he lost, you know, he came to the conclusion that God was experimented on people and tortured them to make them better, you know. And I mean, he became disillusioned. I feel in some ways, kind of disillusioned, you know. And it's like when I walk out now, we live in a cabin in the woods, our little place where we went and hid away. Things don't look as colorful, gray. Noises sound shrill. So it's just like a huge emptiness, a void, you know. And it shows you what life's like when you don't have you don't have that special person. Life does change. I mean, nothing will ever be the same, and I know that. So, I mean, I just... Lucky I got good people at the Rutherford Institute. My five kids have been around me. I got two grandkids. And people like Nisha, my assistant, has been very, very good supporting me and making sure, you know, that I'm okay. And I'm just, you know, I'm sticking in there. I have the work. She had a vision for what we wanted Rutherford to be, and that's to go out and help people.
Yeah.
And we still do that.
And we're talking with John Whitehead, the CEO and founder of the Rutherford Institute. Carol was absolutely a critical factor to the success of Rutherford since day one, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She, you know, she was my right arm. You know, when people would say, "What's your success?" She was in the office next. I always pointed to my right, and I didn't know what I was saying a lot of times. I'd say, "It's my wife," because, you know, she made sure that I dressed right. I mean, she did it all. She'd look at me and go, we'd get in the car in the morning. She always looked super great. I'd look at her and go, "You look great." I always had to say it because it was true. And some days she'd look at me and say, "You look like crap. You need to change your tie." I'm semi-colorblind when it comes to, like, matching things.
Yeah.
And she'd say, "You look like crap. You got to change your outfit."
John, she was truly, sincerely one of the kindest people that I knew. I mean, that's the one word I think of when I think of Carol was kind. I mean, she embodied kindness.
She was a great listener and helped a lot of folks. And like I say, I tend to be, you know, intense, energetic, and, you know, she had to live with me, which is the worst thing you could think about. But she did it. And I look back on it. It was 42 years we were married, and we knew each other 3 years before then. So it was a long journey together. And the day she died in my office, and I did CPR on her, which is traumatic. And the emergency people were great. They were there in 5 minutes and did all they could to help. You know, I knew around noontime, June 3rd, when she died. And it was, I'm a strong believer. You know, I believe that, and you know, my prayers are that I'll reunite, you know. Hopefully I'll be her assistant somewhere in a distant universe someday.
That's beautiful. John Whitehead is my guest this hour on Charlottesville Right Now. We're going to take a break here at the bottom for local news and weather. And when we get back, John, let's talk about some of your recent commentaries that have been published in newspapers around the country. This is Charlottesville Right Now. It's 34 minutes after 4 o'clock in Central Virginia. It's 83 degrees. I hope you're doing well. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Coy Barefoot. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Let's rejoin our conversation with John Whitehead, the CEO and the co-founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, let's talk about some of your recent commentaries that folks should know. They can read them on the website or in, you know,
rutherford.org,
dozens of newspapers around the country. You wrote about Michael Jackson. I was speaking of him at the top of the program about the circus that's going on around his funeral and whatnot. But you also wrote about this and had some interesting observations.
Yeah, my commentary is called Michael Jackson, Media Greed, and the Demise of Democracy. The first thing I noticed, and again, I've seen most of the Michael Jackson videos and stuff, a very talented man, obviously. But this is the fellow they were, up till the time he died, they were calling Wacko Jacko. And basically making money off of his weirdness. And when he died, all of a sudden he became like Jesus Jr.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was is just how parasitical the media has become. And my commentary focuses on the fact of what that does to democracy. Since he's died, I mean, just this morning, and this is the funny thing, I turn on CNN, MSNBC, Fox. They've all merged. They're all doing the same exact coverage, almost as if they got the same camera. So you don't get the news. I mean, soldiers are being killed in Afghanistan. We're building a huge, monstrous military base, $336 million, something like that, in Pakistan. No one's talking about that. The economic condition in Europe is a horrible condition. The unemployment rate continues to rise in America. Those are the issues we're not getting, but we're getting endless coverage of people talking about Michael Jackson, most of whom don't even know him. So what does that do? I mean, Americans already, because of media greed and how they cover things, don't know much about the news of the world, the news of their own country. A Pew Research Center report found, and I'm quoting from it, just came out recently. It said, since the late 1980s, the emergence of 24-hour cable news as a dominant news source and the explosive growth of the Internet have led to major changes in America's public news habits. But a new nationwide survey finds that these revolutions and attendant changes in news audience behaviors have had little impact on how much Americans know about national and international affairs. They did a poll not too long ago when Bush was still in office. 40% of Americans did not know that Dick Cheney was the vice president.
40%
of adult Americans did not know. This is the most influential, important vice president in the history of the country, probably. And most Americans didn't know he was sitting in the White House doing his thing. Most of the time, disastrous thing. So what does it say? I mean, news, in my opinion, should inform, uplift, challenge. And most of the time it doesn't. But with the Jackson thing, it's just going off the deep end. I mean, when you turn on news at night, and these are shows I get invited to be on sometimes, I turn them down. I just say, what's the format? And they say, you're going to be in with three other people, screaming at one another. I just stopped doing that because I found out it was counterproductive. You look like an idiot. But people probably want that. But I think that the news media has a duty, and the duty is to get out there and inform and educate Americans of what the issues are in an intelligent, analytical way. Edward R. Murrow, if you remember the great Edward R. Murrow, who brought Joseph McCarthy down, we don't have those kind of analytical thinkers. The Jim Lehrer and, you know, those kind of programs are good, but they don't have a big audience. CNN is just endless. And now Fox is just endless drivel. But now with the Jackson thing, it shows you how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
And even though most of us don't want to watch it, if we want to get a little bit of news, we have to watch it.
Put up with all that crap. Yeah.
And the sad thing is most Americans get their news off of television. So it's become an entertainment medium. And we all know where that heads. It's the death of democracy, in my opinion. If we don't do something about the news, and it doesn't help it's on 24 hours a day. If you watch headline news, CNN headline news, if they change you to a wall, and you had to watch that for an hour, you'd go insane if you're halfway intelligent, because it's the same exact words like every 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah.
They have a human being reading the same. Why not just put a computer there and do it over and over? The same person reads the same thing over and over. They even laugh the same way. So it's very, very unhealthy for our country. And, you know, thank God we have shows like this and radio where you can actually talk about issues, I mean, issues that impact the country.
Yeah.
You're not getting it, folks. And that's why we should be objecting to the Michael Jackson coverage. It's not because of the fact of who he was or what he did and all that. He was a very talented person, obviously. His videos changed the way we watch those things.
Yeah.
The Thriller video was just amazing. But was he Beethoven? You know, I would say this. If Bob Dylan died today, the great Bob Dylan, who changed an entire generation, or Paul McCartney died, who is probably the greatest tunesmith in the 20th century, who, you know, the Beatle,
yeah,
they wouldn't get as much coverage as this. And the question is why? I think Michael Jackson is the weird kind of person that draws the tension. They know they can make money, and they sell you. When you go to break, you get those endlessly awful commercials you got to watch in between the news clips.
Yeah. We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you'd like to join this conversation, please give us a call, 977-1070. We were talking during the break about Neil Postman, the communications scholar, and his book, which I strongly, strongly recommend everyone read. It's a short paperback. You can read it in a weekend. It's called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And the cover is so great because it shows a family sitting in front of the glow of a television set, and they have no heads. And it speaks to what you're talking about, that we have become so enamored with the sideshow and the freak show that we're losing sight of what is really happening in the world and what's truly, truly important. And, you know, I think of Mr. Jefferson saying it's absolutely critical that you educate the masses because they're the ones that are going to run things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was the whole point of the University of Virginia. They were going to educate people. In fact, Jefferson's philosophy, it was a great one. He thought that early education, the basis of early education was training people in their rights and their duties for government. Today, kids graduate from high school, and they can't tell you two of the freedoms in the First Amendment. I have law students come into my intern program, and I'll look them in the eye and say, these are law students. Give me the 5 freedoms in the First Amendment. And they look at me like, well, in fact, one not too long ago went, freedom of speech. And he said, freedom of religion? And he went, the right to bear arms. I said, sorry, you just jumped to the Second Amendment. This is a law student, the second year of law student.
Amazing.
So, yeah, they're not training us. The educational systems are not doing it because we are dumbing down our culture. But the fact that people could sit and actually watch, I'm worried about people who could actually watch the Jackson coverage for more than 10 minutes.
And you know that there's...
because there's no content.
There's tens of thousands of people today who are doing just that. Yeah, they're just sitting there watching all of it.
Yeah, so what it says is that we're not participating anymore, and what it says is that we're going to be dictated to by the government. Our president, you know, I believe that television is made for the psychopath who eventually someday is going to smile a lot and going to sell us a bill of goods, and we're going to look at him and we're going to go, gee, we shouldn't have elected this guy. We've said that about other people who have run for office, but it's the media made. If we get so accustomed, and we're becoming accustomed to believing that what is on the TV is important, and most of the time it's not, we're going to be duped. And yeah. I feel sorry. It's just too bad our educational systems are not keeping up, because you know, as I reiterate over and over, if we don't know our rights, we don't know our duties as government, and we just don't get, and people don't get involved, they don't seem to care how their tax money is being spent. They don't know that, how many people know that we have bases all over the world that are draining the economy, military bases. It's just, you know, again, we're building one in Pakistan. And how many people know that we're building a base in Pakistan? $336 million base, and it's meant to be permanent.
Yeah.
Why are we there?
What alarms me too, John, is that we have allowed freedom to be redefined as the ability to travel, if you can afford it, and, you know,
go to the mall,
shop, choosing between 12 different types of toothpaste. I mean, yes. We've defined that as freedom when freedom is the extent to which you participate in the decisions that affect your life, the extent to which you step up and get involved in your community and your government, that's freedom.
See, we forget. I mean, the people who started this country, the Jeffersons, the Madisons, the Patrick Henrys, the Adams, if what happened under the George Bush administration, the onslaught against civil liberties, which was massive and it's still continuing, is Dahlia Lithwick, who spoke to my interns yesterday, she calls Obama the keeper of Bush secrets. He's just continuing it. They would have been up in arms, and the word is arms. They would have been ready to revolt. We just sit passively by while they take the jobs and send them out of the country, while people lose their jobs here, while people lose their homes, and we just take it.
And they work more and more and harder for less and less.
Harder and harder for less and less. Mothers and fathers have to put their kids in daycare centers. They can't watch their kids during the day. It's just... And we're taking it. The question is, how much more will people take? You know what I think? They'll take a lot. And that's because they just don't know. We just did the 4th of July. How many people know that the country started with a revolution? Why are they shooting firecrackers off? Why are we eating hot dogs on that day? I tell people that we should be probably with picket signs at City Hall.
That would be the way to commemorate July 4th.
Yes, because people died.
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Susan, waiting very patiently on line one. Susan, thank you for your patience. You're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. John, I do want to say I'm so sorry about your loss. And secondly, to let you know, I've been reading your books for 25 years since I've been in college, and you do great work and keep on fighting the good fight.
Thank you.
My question, I know the frustration of trying to find the truth of what's out there and what's really happening, and my question for you is this: how do we know what source to trust, and where can we get true information and not bias that's disguised as objective information?
I think Coy can help on this. I think today you have to go to the internet. You have to read a lot of websites. Radio is a good source. Television programs, to me, they all just kind of bump up against one another and they sound very similar. But I think the internet probably is one of the best places. Your local newspaper. If you want to know local news, the Daily Progress, Seville Week of the Hook, publications here, you got to read local news, especially these days, and keep our local newspapers in business. People who don't subscribe to the Daily Progress and don't read the Hook and the Seville Weekly, shame on you. You should be supporting those papers, because if they go out of business, you're going to be stuck with talking heads on CNN and Fox News. So
when I teach media to the Sorensen students, we have the youth leaders in the summer, I talk about, if you want to really understand the news and appreciate what's going on in the world, you have to join the conversation. You're not just going to go out and consume someone's commentary or lecture or their essay. You've got to join the conversation, see who commented on that, and participate in that conversation. And that's when you start to truly edify yourself and appreciate.
Email. You know. I get a lot of emails from people, and some of them, come over crazy, but a lot of them, they'll say, hey, here's a point I disagree with you on, I read them. I read everything I get, it'll move you. But again, I think you're right. The politicians, that's who you've got to be, Perriello, whoever, here locally, you got to bombard them if you don't agree with what they're doing. And again, I'm not saying they're bad people, but they have to know you're out there, you're alive, that you're reading news, and you're asking them questions. Is it true that we're expanding militarily, and how does that affect our economy? I have a friend, by the way, who works in Congress for a leading senator, and he does investigations of how money is spent overseas. I talked to him about 2 weeks ago. He came by to see me. And he said, I was just overseas, and he says, I can't really tell how they're spending our money over there, basically. Some of the military installations, he says, it's a little strange. A lot of money's going out, and we don't know where it's going. And you have black ops programs. A lot of these agencies have black ops. That means we don't know how they spend their
money.
There's
literally no oversight
at all. There's no oversight on that at all. See, so that's what you need to be bugging your representatives about. But, again, you have to do it. Know your rights or lose them.
Susan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go to James on line two. James, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Hello, John Whitehead.
Hello.
Listen, I graduated in 1983 from college. Now, a couple things I want to jump on you about. The ops program that's going on right now that some agencies are doing,
mm-hmm.
we as Americans don't need to know everything. We as Americans are nosy people. There are some things, let's just face it, we really don't need to. We don't need to know. Okay? Because some Americans can't handle
mm-hmm.
that information.
Yes.
Now, think about Michael Jackson. And listen, I cried more when Luther Vandross died than Michael Jackson. but
good
for you. this culture that this media culture is going on right now, people all over the world want to see it. Me, I haven't watched any of it because I don't really care. But there are a lot of people that do care.
Sure.
So
I mean, I think it's a news item, but it is not the news item. That's all I'm saying.
But see, that's according to you. Now, if Paul McCartney died or Bob Dylan, you would watch that before you watch Michael Jackson. But see, that's your culture.
Not really, no. But go ahead.
But that's, and I'm like you. I mean, I like Michael Jackson, but I'm telling you, too much is too much for me.
Yes.
But there are some people just sitting in front of that TV and watch it hour in and hour out.
And what we're saying is they're not participating in their democracy. They're just becoming mindless people sitting there. They're not getting it, and they don't know what's going on in the world. See, again, we go back to the people who started this country. They said, you got to know what's going on. You got to challenge your leaders. As far as the black ops programs, here's the serious problem. Article 1 of our Constitution requires a public accounting to the American people of all money spent. It violates the Constitution. If we don't want to know, again, there are a lot of people who do want to know. Coy wants to know. I want to know. But the Constitution requires that we know. Now, if we don't want to know, then we should change the Constitution. Otherwise, we're not following the law, and that's a real problem.
James, thank you for the call. We got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. You can learn more online at rutherford.org. Greg is waiting on line three. Greg, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Hey, John. How are you? Nice to meet you. I'd just like to make a couple comments, and one is the caller earlier said, what do you listen to? What do you read? I would suggest reading the Constitution and finding an older government-level book from college, first-year college, and kind of follow the Constitution with the government book. The other point I want to make is I'm a stonemason, and I work on a job site, and I try to teach what little I know about civics while we're at the job, and people basically just aren't interested, and it scares me. So I would suggest that you wouldn't be allowed to graduate without a basic civics exam.
Agreed, yeah.
And the other comment I want to make is, to make America strong right now, we have to be completely energy independent, not vote for cap and trade, destroy that bill, open up our natural resources here, and then increase our Navy by double in order to maintain that security from the world, because most things happen within 200 miles of the borders in most countries. Comment on any of those, please.
Yeah, as far as civics, that's really something close to my heart. I've argued that, and I'm working on a book that'll basically advocate this, and that is, by the time a child graduates from eighth grade in America, they should have a working knowledge of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and be ready to carry a picket sign by the time they hit high school. We don't do that. I mean, it's just they're just not taught that anymore. In fact, we have a little pamphlet, and I'll give it out free today. It's called, Do You Know Your Bill or Do You Know Your Rights? It's a little succinct pamphlet that goes through all the Bill of Rights and what people need to know. It has pictures. We actually tested some fifth graders on this and went over, and they loved it. And they actually started learning because they liked the cartoons in it. So, yeah, you can teach, but we've got to do it. And, I mean, Rutherford Institute should not be teaching kids the Bill of Rights. I mean, the public schools should be doing it. But by eighth grade, definitely kids should know their rights and be ready to participate in democracy. That's the only way you can participate. If you don't know the government's taking your rights away, then you don't object. And so, again, I've had kids from...
And if you don't know your rights, you don't know they're taking them away.
I won't say what high schools. I've had some really bright kids come over from some of the public high schools here and meet with me, and they go, we don't have any rights in school. And what do we do? And I talked to them, and I encouraged them. I said, listen, if they don't teach you your rights, maybe you get a picket sign and walk out in front of the school. And I would hope the school administrators would say, that's great. They're participating in democracy, even though they're picketing me. But most people won't do that.
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. Greg, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Rob on line one. Rob, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. Not Rob. It's Tom.
I'm sorry. Tom, go ahead.
Yes, Coy. And, John, I've got to tell you how much respect and admiration I have for you and your work. I think all of us owe a great deal to you, none more than I. And I'm also very, very sad in the passing of Carol and very honored at the way you speak of your loving lifetime partner. It speaks volumes about you and your character.
Thank you.
I also wanted to make comment about what you had said earlier about your local sources being important. Daily Progress is important to keep up with the news. But you also said you need to let your legislators know. And you know, on 4th of July, you said you should be down at the courthouse. Well, there were about 1,000 people actually at the courthouse in Charlottesville, Virginia, talking about the Declaration of Independence.
That's right. It didn't get much coverage, by the way. That's unfortunate. Yeah.
Exactly. It was completely ignored, really, by the Daily Progress, and that is kind of sad, particularly when there are people who are active and doing just what you suggest should be done.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I just, you know, you need to get the news out there. You're going to have to force the publications to cover what you're doing out there. I knew it was happening, but again, I was surprised it didn't get more local coverage.
And we should recognize the fact that the economic effects on the progress are and media general in general are one reason that we're not seeing more coverage of local events is because, you know, they're cutting back. Let's admit it.
Yeah,
the
everybody's cutting back.
Cutting way back. They didn't even cover the July 4th naturalization ceremony at Monticello, which they've covered every year for years.
That is a legitimate concern, and that is really speaking to the heart of the matter. We're all concerned about the economics of the situation. John's already touched on that. Why are we spending $336 million in Pakistan when we have these issues right here at home?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, and I say if you took one-third of what's spent on the military budget overseas and put it in the American economy, we could put people back to work.
Let's go quickly. Tom, thank you for the call. Let's go to Rob on line one. Rob, got time for a quick question or comment. Go right ahead.
Yeah, just I wonder, you know, you talk about questioning where the military budget goes. What's the take on the representatives passing the cap trade bill without actually having read it? I'll take my answer offline.
That is a usual criticism of the people that represent us in Congress. They didn't even read the Patriot Act, which changed the fundamental structure of law in the country. They don't read their bills. They're lazy. We have a very corrupt Congress. I work with people in Congress. I have congressmen's aides that tell me we can't get them to read the bills. A lot of them don't even work a full year. So 170 days a year, some of them work. So what do we need to do? Again, be active, folks. Get in there. Throw them out of office if they don't go to work. Ask your local people that you are around here in the legislature, how many days are you working a year? I mean, I work every day, sometimes 7 days a week. I would hope they would do as well.
We got time for one more call. Mimi's on line three. Mimi, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
I would like to extend my sympathies to you, Mr. Whitehead. I've heard you on voice show many times, and I respect your opinion.
Thank you.
I would also like to ask you your opinion of Sonia Sotomayor.
Sotomayor is, she's going to be confirmed. I think there were better qualified people. Obviously, Harold Coe. There were other, you know. The thing about her is she's going to be very easy to confirm. I think it's good that we pick a Hispanic woman. I think it's more representative of our culture. I don't think there's any. Again, she's not the best pick academically or otherwise, but
she's an easy confirmation.
She's an easy confirmation, and that's the way Obama works. He's
a
centrist.
Yeah.
He picks the easy route, and that's a problem.
John Whitehead is the co-founder and the CEO at the Rutherford Institute, online at Rutherford.org. And John, again, to you and your family, we're very, very sorry of Carol's passing. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.